We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino Newcastle, home of the £4 pint on match day. That's all Newcastle home games and any televised Newcastle fixture. The offer applies from midday until midnight on all draft beers. Be gamble aware, over 18s only. Visit begambleaware.org. Be drink aware, and for details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk. That's recording. It's the True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Newcastle absolutely hammered Tottenham Hotspur by 4-0 at St James's Park, and we're going to talk about what happened and why. I'm Alex. I'm joined by Charlotte, Si, and Michael Martin to get into this one. What a win, what a performance, and the rest of the season looks incredibly good from here. Little note from me, we're doing a live podcast show, very short notice. It's a week Friday, the 26th of April, at our sponsors, Aspers Casino Newcastle. Come along, limited tickets available for this one. Link in the description to this podcast. We're going to get right into the race for the Europa League and beyond in this live show. So we'd love to see you there. Plenty of tickets sold already. As I said, link in the description to this podcast, and we'll get on with the rest of the show. Mick, it's great to have you here. Fantastic to see you. Great to be invited, I'm sure, for you after a 4-0 win in the sunshine at St James's Park. What did you make of that yesterday, mate?
It was fantastic, and I didn't think that result was on the cards by any stretch of the imagination, especially as I saw me Jinxie One Magpie drive into the game, which normally means me heart sinks and I kind of turn the car around and go home. But no, I mean, I thought the overall performance, the approach was fantastic, and I was wondering who was going to be playing left back and all of this kind of thing. And we got a bit of a surprise when we got there as to how he'd set everything up. But thoroughly deserved, I thought. And really, Tottenham were lucky to get back down the road on the end of a 4-0 Hayden, because it could have been a lot more. We missed a lot of chances.
Yeah, it's just class, wasn't it? It was just a really, really, really pleasant day. From the get-go, there was sort of a, I don't know, 20 minutes of it being kind of deadlock, not sure. The first goal's kind of going to decide this. And then the moment that was broken, and then 90 seconds later, you just thought Spurs aren't getting back into this at all. This is just going to be so good. And it was just fun. It was a really fun one to watch. The players looked comfortable. They knew what was expected of them. They knew what the plan was. We didn't know what the plan was. Spurs certainly didn't know what the plan was. And it was just incredible to be there, incredible to kind of see us kick on from where we've, you know, some lows of this season, to see us ending or getting towards the end of it in that manner was just mint.
It's the least stressed I've been at St James's Park in about 3 years, I think, honestly. I've never had a more comfortable 90 minutes. From the start, we were the better side, and yeah, they had a couple of half chances, but we always looked like we're in control of the game. As soon as we got the goal, it wasn't a case of, right, can we hang on? It was like, yeah, how many more can we get here? And it just got better and better and better as the game went on. We didn't run out of energy at any point. There was no periods after that where Spurs got back in the game and you started to bite your nails. It was really, really comfortable from start to finish. Absolutely brilliant. I think this is, we talked about it for so long over the Christmas period of, well, when we get one game a week, we'll see Newcastle better prepared for each fixture. And Eddie Howe with 7 days in the training ground, that's what you're getting. We're finally getting it. I suppose it was a bit wishful thinking to expect that to happen straight away. It's taken a little bit of time, as it always does with Eddie's teams, to kind of get a bit of momentum going. But the momentum was there to see yesterday, and we are flying again.
One of the most impressive aspects of it for me is that you're not supposed to be able to do that to the best teams in the league. Mm-hmm. They're the best teams in the league for a reason. Spurs went into that fixture in fourth place. No one has done to them what we did this season. They only lost three away games before yesterday all season. Yeah, they got turned over by three at Brighton and Spurs, but they were at Fulham. But they were in those games. They weren't hammerings. As Mick said at the start, Spurs can count themselves unbelievably lucky to get away with a 4-0 yesterday. Teams who went to Newcastle start the game in eighth place aren't supposed to be able to do that to the top sides in the league. That's incredibly promising. And I look at Newcastle as the fourth best team in the Premier League last season and compare them to Spurs now, and you'd think we were miles ahead of them. Miles ahead of them then. We were miles ahead of them yesterday, and it bodes very well for the future if we can get players back for next season. And maybe I should just enjoy yesterday, not think too much about next season. But Newcastle's dominance from minute one almost to minute 95 was incredibly promising. And like you say, Si, there was never any jeopardy in that result. Even at 0-0 for me, Timo Werner has a couple of air shots that he maybe should do better on. But ultimately, Martin Dubravka, even at 0-0, is just not in the fixture. He's not part of it. You know, the fact that Newcastle are able to put a team like Spurs, who have got basically no injuries, I think Richarlison was the only player missing for them yesterday, you shouldn't be able to do that to these sides. You know, Spurs still have got, they've got a bigger wage bill, they've got a bigger stadium, they've got everything going for them, they've got a manager they all love, and that's what we could do to them with, as Mick says, with Emile Kraft in the side, with a new formation, with no one on the bench to come on from an attacking perspective. It makes the future look incredibly promising, and it's just, these are the days that you go for. These are the days that you turn up. These are the days you enter ballots. They're the days you do whatever you've got to do to get into the ground. Were for days like yesterday. And to get two of them inside 2 weeks after West Ham, pretty good time to be a Newcastle fan. And yeah, I thought the ground yesterday was just absolutely bouncing. Fantastic day all round.
I agree. I think 12:30 kickoffs can be kind of hit or miss with the crowd and the sort of feeling in the ground, because obviously it's a bit earlier. People are up earlier, you know, quick breakfast. Some people prefer to drink before the game and don't have a chance to do that, all of that stuff. But it was just, I felt like everyone was up for it. I don't know if it's the sun. I kept saying this. Somebody asked me recently what I was looking forward to for the rest of the season. I was like, sunny days, sunny days, and like being out with my friends and going to the football. And it like makes a difference. But the mood in the ground from, I got in there half an hour before kickoff. It was just, everybody seemed like they were up for it. And everybody I was talking to before the game seemed like they were up for it. I had a friend texting me who was chatting to a Spurs fan who was bricking it. Was like, this is, you know, I've come to St. James's Park five times. I've never seen Spurs win there. Mm-hmm. Just really, really worried about the game. And I hadn't felt like, I didn't feel any kind of worry in that way. And it felt like that in the ground. And I felt like that brought the players up as well.
I think because we started pretty well, it helps. I think you normally know after 5 minutes what kind of performance you're looking at. And I think the crowd cottoned on to the fact, actually, we're looking good here. It's going to be our day. And I think it just reacted back and forward. You know, the crowd lifted a bit. The players lifted a bit. We got the goal. The crowd lifted again. And then it just lifted everything. And it just went in that direction the whole way through the fixture. And, you know, after West Ham and Everton in particular, all we said, I think, on this podcast was how bad the opposition was, and that West Ham, it would have been embarrassing not to win the game. Everton, it was kind of embarrassing not to get the win, even though it was pretty unlucky and we played quite well. And you want to say the same about Spurs. I thought they were pretty bad yesterday, but we can't keep saying teams are bad.
We've just
beaten a very, very good team. And I mean, to be fair, I was sitting there thinking, how are these in the top four? Just like we were last time, how were they our rivals for the top four? But there must be a reason. You know, they are good on every day. But it's funny because we had, what, like 25% possession, and we've absolutely bossed them off the park. So that just, like, what were they doing with the ball? Absolutely nothing. We were just absolutely set up to kill them. And that's such a credit to the players. Like, I just don't know. I don't have the words to describe in this entire
good
podcast.
Good that we're doing a podcast.
Yeah. To how good it was.
I think Spurs have played kind of a bit Spursy type of football, if that's not a cliche. And a mate of mine was saying James Maddison is probably the most Spurs player of Spurs have ever had, because he looks great. He's got loads of nice touches on the ball. He can move the ball around. He's quite aesthetically good to watch as a footballer. And I'm picking on him. He is a good player, obviously. But they were playing lots of pretty nice passing football that was a bit pointless as well, because we were able to sit back and our whole kind of approach was just to smother them. So let them have the ball, you can pass, you can play the ball 10 yards to each other and back again and move around and look good, blah, 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 in those dreadful away kits that they had. But ultimately, when Newcastle had the ball, it meant more.
Yeah.
And that was the bottom line, I thought.
Newcastle have now beaten Tottenham, Chelsea, Villa, Arsenal, Man United and Man City at home this season, which is pretty remarkable considering what the team and the manager in the particular have been up against selection-wise this season. And I think the national media are now starting to pick up a little bit on the fact that Howe's only lost six or seven home league games since he's taken over. And, you know, he's had 50-odd, and it makes them kind of up there with the very best sides at home. If you look at his overall reign, six players starting yesterday that were at the club before House. That's not just on the bench, that's literally in the first team. Half the team was there from before he's come in. And for him to put together that performance and be that dominant, it's, like you said, it's hard to kind of put into words because it shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be the case to put that game on television because it's supposed to be a good, even contest where people expect Newcastle to do well. People expect there to be goals in Newcastle's fixtures. You know, we're now back up there being the third best goal scorers in the league, and it just makes the rest of the season look so appealing and attractive because we're in sixth place. As we record this podcast, we're in sixth place. We've had a fantastic few weeks, and really, apart from that Chelsea defeat in the league a few weeks ago, it's gone pretty perfectly, isn't it? Like you say, Si, there was that period after December, kind of January, early February, when particularly the Bournemouth and Luton games, people look at those and think, oh, if we won those games, we'd be in the Champions League conversation. But the sides Howe was still putting out were still knackered, injured, low on confidence. Once you see an Eddie Howe side get on a roll, and ultimately that's what we have seen in the last couple of seasons, is that once, you know, it was 8 wins in 9 that kind of propelled us to Champions League football from March to May last season. We could be on the cusp of doing something special like that now in terms of the rest of the season. So much to come out of yesterday. Really, really, really positive day. And we're going to get into actually how we won the game in the rest of the show. But I'm going to leave us there for part one. A few adverts coming up. If you want to listen to these pods without the adverts, it's only £3 a month on our Patreon tier. Link in the description to this podcast. We do loads of other Newcastle United podcasts too, if you want to come and join us for that, as we celebrate this win and then build up to a crucial week when we'll play Palace and Sheffield United after that. Come and join us as well.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Let's get into this team selection, this set of tactics that Newcastle have won the game. And I want to start on this one. And Si, you've touched on it already. Newcastle have 27% of the ball, which, spookily enough, is the exact same percent of the ball they had against PSG at home, with a near identical result. And, you know, Rafa Benitez is the one who said, and I respect him a lot for saying this, when he was asked on TV, I think it was before Newcastle beat Leicester, in 2019, if you want to think about the useless things that are in my head that I can remember. And he said, possession is a made-up statistic for television. He said, the thing he was interested about is controlling the game. That's what managers look at, controlling the game. And I think it's inarguable to say Newcastle controlled that game from minute one to minute 90. And one of the most impressive things about the way Newcastle played is they almost had a different plan for every phase of the game. So when Spurs were trying to, as Mick has alluded to, kind of build up an attack from the back from their goalkeeper, Newcastle do the traditional Newcastle thing, press really high, loads of running, loads of legs, loads of get the crowd involved, and try and force Spurs out of play or turnover possession, which they did countless times, probably most importantly for the second goal when Spurs try and play out from the back or the keeper and force the keeper to go long because they press high. They've just scored Newcastle, but they're still pressing high. Gordon's running at the goalkeeper and they're rewarded 30 seconds later with the ball being in the back of the net. Then you've got Newcastle out of possession, trying to control Spurs, and depending on where they're on the pitch, they're a flat back five with Elliot Anderson and Jacob Murphy, or they're playing this kind of 3-2-3-2 formation with Murphy and Guimaraes shielding the back four, a midfield three further up, and then the two strikers causing chaos and able to capitalise on any kind of quick ball or ball in behind Spurs. So there was just so much going on. And the question that I'll open up to you, all of you, whoever wants to answer it can, surely now the question about Eddie Howe being one-dimensional tactical coach with only one formation has been blown out of the water.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, it's one game, but it was so emphatic. It was so disciplined and it was so, every player knew what they were doing. It was so well executed yesterday that I don't, all of the Eddie Howe sort of naysayers were very, very quiet yesterday on social media, and rightly so. And it would be weird if they had come out and said, I still think he should go. I still think he's rubbish. But yeah, I think it was, I think Eddie Howe's such a considered manager. He really thinks about everything, every aspect of the game. He spent all of his time off, as we know, digitizing all of his gameplays and things like that, and going and watching different managers and learning about how to organize a defense, all of these things. I don't think he would have been the kind, I don't think he's the kind of manager who would have just been like, well, they're saying what about me? Well, I'll do something different. He's going to plan it. He's going to make sure he's got the personnel there. He's going to make sure it's going to blow all of those kind of haters out of the water. And he did it yesterday. I think it's so exciting to know that he's got that in him and to know that we've got all these players coming back, because he can do different things and he will be doing different things next season. It's exciting.
I think equally just credit for basically of the 11 players he had available to pick who could start the game. I mean, yes, we had Hall and Livermore on the bench, but there must be a reason they couldn't start. They must have been fit enough to play 90 minutes. That he's found a way to beat Spurs 4-0 based on, and found a perfect system for the players he had available. And just every player excelled in this 11. And it was kind of 4-3-3 on the ball, wasn't it? Where kind of Barnes would get forward with Elliot Anderson behind him. But then it almost turned into like a 5-3-2 off the ball, and Murphy dropped back into right back, and basically, but Barnes sort of left wing back, or Anderson, one of the two would drop in. And it's just like, to have all those players so well drilled in the space of a week for what seemed like a totally new plan and to execute it so perfectly is a massive credit to Howe and all the coaching staff and all the players as well for getting it, because they all clearly were doing their jobs correctly. And it just, Spurs seemed so shell-shocked, so unable to come up with a counter to it, that's just, it's just an incredible thing to witness in terms of a football team, as you keep saying, a thing that shouldn't happen against a side that good. And it just, yeah, it's one that we'll enjoy for weeks and weeks, I think.
The thing about the Spurs high line is a lot of fans, you always think you've got a chance against Spurs' high line, but most teams don't exploit it. Most teams can't exploit it. They play the same high line against every single opposition. It seems incredibly naive to play that high line against Barnes, Isak and Gordon. But Spurs do it against Manchester City. They do it against Liverpool. So having the ability to exploit it is one thing. And then I suppose to further what you've said there, it's one thing preparing and training. It's another thing applying it in a fixture and not losing your head. And then, you know, we don't know. I'm sure Postecoglou at halftime does try to come up with some of the plans to try and counter what Newcastle are doing. I think the fact that the back three, when they are in a back three, I really like that, because that team sheet comes out yesterday and your initial response is, we'll score here, although we'll definitely score here, but can this back five keep a clean sheet between them, or back whatever it turned out to be? And the clean sheet for me is almost as impressive as the four, because Spurs have got no one missing. They've got Richarlison, and that's it. This is the best that they've got to bring to St. James's Park. To keep a clean sheet when Newcastle have been conceding so many goals since Martin de Graaf has come into the team, it's just a remarkable defensive performance as much as anything. And Mick, you called it in the WhatsApp with us last night when you said Spurs were lucky to get naught, which I think is spot on. I mean, were you panicking when you saw that back four?
A little bit, because you know, Spurs are a really good side and they're fourth for a reason. And I went into that game and I was kind of, I wonder whether or not we can put two wins on the spin, because we found that difficult this season. So I was thinking this is a classic after the Lord Mayor show of that good win down at Fulham. So I was concerned that they would pass through us and that we would concede goals and then we would struggle scoring them as well, because that has been a case. And even when we went 1-0 up yesterday, I was thinking this isn't in the bag, because I've seen Newcastle go ahead in loads of games this season at home and not win. So I was anxious throughout all of that. But I just thought we were very clever in how we played. And I thought Guimarães had maybe a quieter game, if that doesn't sound disingenuous, but he was there to do some killer things, you know. So it was a weird one. But in terms of seeing this, the team sheet, and thinking, oh, well, we're nailed on to win here, absolutely not. I was a bit surprised by the performance, and I thought for the first 15-20 minutes, I thought we were going to be on the back foot throughout the game. But we got the first goal, and their horses just seemed to collapse, didn't they, around them? So
completely.
Yeah. So it was a funny one. I think I probably overestimated Tottenham and underestimated us.
I think it's really interesting hearing you say that, because from our first goal, and obviously our second goal came only 90 seconds later, so that kind of cements it a little bit. But I didn't feel like we'd be chasing the game. I just felt like Spurs had nothing. Their game plan seemed to be to get into our heads and annoy us, like Madison slamming his body into Gordon at one point and things like that. That seemed to be their whole like shtick yesterday, and we just dealt with it so comfortably. That once I knew once we had a goal, or I felt like once we had a goal, it was just all going to be us. So maybe it's my sunny, optimistic side.
I'll be honest.
You, Mick.
And my misery.
No. Even at 2-0, and I think we said this at half time, Alex, we could have done with a third. So even then, you still think, even though there's nothing about the game that's telling you Spurs are going to suddenly pull something out here, you just expect something to happen or us to drop off.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's more surprising that we didn't at any point drop off or let them back in the game, because you're right, even at 2-0, you shouldn't have been worried because of the way the game was going. But the Newcastle fan in you just thinks, well, what's... So this isn't right. Something's going to happen here.
But you can talk about formations and tactics, etc. But maybe it is tactical. It's a debate, isn't it? But for me, I thought we were back to that old. It's only a season long, but that intensity is our identity kind of thing.
Yeah.
We were closing the ball down really quickly in certain positions, and I was a few times where I noticed that when they were kind of in attacking positions, going down the flanks and kind of on the edge of the box, etc., there would sometimes be about two or three of our players chasing them. So they couldn't even turn round, you know. It was like, well, by the time I get turned round, if I get past these, I'm going to be bloody exhausted anyway, which I think does drain players having to play up against that kind of that tactical approach, that game plan, if you like. So I just thought we were fantastic in that approach, and every player was on it, every single player. I mean, I've done it myself, but I've picked out a few players' individual performances, but it was a collective team effort, you know. And there were several who were just at it all day. I thought Elliot Anderson was outstanding the whole game, and probably won't get the kind of the attention that he should, because obviously Isak and Gordon were exceptional, weren't they? They were, you know, I hate to say it, but perhaps world class, you know, how they played. But Elliot Anderson, he was terrific. Reminds us a little bit of James Milner. in his kind of his approach to the game. He's a very determined, strong type of lad. But they're all like that. Players who have not necessarily got a lot of confidence in, like Jacob Murphy and Emil Kraft, they were really, really great. You know, some of the tackles they put in, the passing. The general player was much better, I have to say, than that Everton game. Even though we should have won that game, the passing was more accurate. They just seem to have a greater idea about what they're doing, you know. So they need to take that into the next couple of games at least, and then we'll kind of be able to be a bit more ambitious about what we're expecting for them this season.
I think the thing I noticed about, like you say, Spurs didn't have many options of to attack us, but you're right, they were kind of forced down the wings, and the kind of combination, like you say, of Murphy, Longstaff and Kraft on one side, and then Byrne, Anderson and sort of Barnes as well chipping in, just forcing them wider and wider. And they had Son in the box, and he's a world-class player, Son, obviously, but he was leading the line. And if you reduce them to trying to kind of cross it from the touchline, that's fine. We're absolutely fine. We've dealt with that all day. We've got Byrne and Cher in the middle who were just dominant. So I think the game plan in terms of how to defend their pacey wingers and kind of that their attempts to break through is, like I say, everyone knew their job. Everyone worked really, really hard, including some of those players that we've had doubts about for weeks and weeks and kind of been questioning, that all dug in and did an absolutely perfect.
And you won't see a less effective player than that Werner. God, yeah. I wouldn't thank you for him. You wouldn't.
One of the ways Newcastle, I think, have improved in recent weeks is their approach to what goes on in both boxes. And you've both kind of just touched on it there. So whenever Spurs came forward yesterday, one of the things that was striking was how indirect they are compared to Newcastle. Mm. Newcastle get the ball to the opposition penalty box as quickly as they can. They very rarely pass backwards unless they've got to. And if they're close to the box, the players on either sides are getting to the byline, or someone's overlapping them to the byline to either play the ball to put a ball in or have a shot. Compare that to Spurs yesterday. How many touches? They've probably got loads of touches in Newcastle's box, but they just seem scared to shoot. And one of the reasons they're scared to shoot, like you said, Mick, is because they're swarmed constantly. Mm. And that's the benefit of the tactical setup, which we also saw against Wolves at home, is Spurs kind of can get themselves in what they call, you know, good transitions, but all of a sudden there's seven Newcastle players back. Yeah. And then they're going back to the midfielder, who's going back to the centre back, and you run out of ideas pretty quick, and it must be disheartening. So Newcastle are swarming Spurs players at the edge of the in Newcastle's box whenever Spurs players have the ball. And then at the other end of the pitch, because the lads are so good, like Mick has said, we don't actually need to overload the box with players or to have too many runners taking away a man. We do try to do that in phases, but the quality of the lads we've got up top, there can be five Spurs players back. Those two don't really need anyone else. And you saw several times, actually, Isak and Gordon played through almost one-on-one and nearly got a shot off, and it's all last-ditch tackles. It's all throwing yourself in front of the ball, not sure where it's going to go. Newcastle don't defend like that at all anymore, because everyone's back, everyone's in position, and everyone knows what they do. And now it's a relatively high risk strategy, because if you go 1-0 down, it becomes much harder to play like that and stay in the game. But it was the right strategy for the opponent yesterday. And again, I just think Newcastle are so effective in both penalty areas, with world class players at one end and limited by Premier League standard players at the other end. It's kind of testament to how's coaching that he's getting a tune out of both ends of the pitch with vastly different quality of players. And I actually thought the decision to go to, I don't know if we can call it a back three yesterday because it was so hybrid, but I know for a fact Dan Burns a better left centre back than he is a left back. And I think Emil Kraft's a better right centre back than he is a right back. Mm. So to be able to get those players to play those positions whilst maybe helping out a little bit on the flanks with the support from Murphy and Anderson or Barnes at the other side, it's just perfect. It is just perfect. It's easy to sit here after a 4-0 win and talk up the manager and talk up the tactics, but the evidence is there in front of us yesterday. It was just a perfect approach. I don't think any manager in the world could have got more from that 11 against that opponent than Howe did yesterday. And I've doubted him plenty of times this season. I really have, in terms of some tactical calls and playing Dan Burn at left back constantly. Mm. But yesterday was just perfection.
And I thought the centre forward position was like critical for both teams, because as a comment from a lad around us who said Tottenham looked like Tottenham without Harry Kane, which is what Tottenham are. Yesterday, they certainly were that, and I'm not taking it away from them, and they are a good side. But Isak was such an important player for us, and the lad is on the way to being the best centre forward we've had since Alan Shearer, you know. And you know, you might say, well, he hasn't had much competition, but he really is. He's exceptional. And you know, his stats up against Haaland is unbelievable, really, given, you know, the season that we've had and he's had personally. I just think he transforms the game. He becomes that fulcrum of our team. So when we're wanting to go forward, it's kind of, where is he?
Mm.
Can we find him? And the players are looking for him, and so are they. So their defenders are like, you know, if he gets a sniff, he's going to score. Because when he gets in attacking positions, he's so strong. But when they were attacking, it was like, well, we haven't got confidence in one player to take it on.
Right.
So they were kind of, well, I'll drop it off to my mate, see if he can do anything, and then I'll run somewhere else. And he's passed it back to us. So there's nothing on. And that's why I'm so critical of that Werner, because he's one of those forward players who never scores. It's a great job, isn't it? You know, so I haven't got the responsibility of scoring or defending. I'll just be here looking good. Whereas Isak is just on the hunt for a goal all of the time, and he puts the fear of God into defenders. And we've all seen the crazy photos and memes, etc., of their lads slipping and sliding all over the place. But he's just such an important part of the team.
It's easy, isn't it, to be a good centre-back when you don't play against great centre-forwards?
Exactly.
And that's ultimately this kid, this 22-year-old who they've been, you know, raving Anderman about. Yeah, had a real tough day yesterday. And, one of the key things about the reason Newcastle are so comfortable yesterday is that they basically don't have to worry too much about building from midfield. We can, you know, the midfielders did a lot, and we'll get into that in part three of the show. And I think that your comment about Bruno fits perfectly into that. It wasn't a game where Newcastle imposed themselves on Spurs' midfield and controlled that midfield area. The quality Newcastle have at both ends of the pitch means we can just bypass it. And that's actually a pretty privileged position to be in, because most teams can't do that, and they need to go through the phases to put together 10 or 15 passes in midfield before moving aside from side to side. It's actually football in its simplest form to just be like, no, back to front, long ball over the top. There's this big gap behind you. We're going to run into it. You're not going to be able to catch it. And then the hilarious, like you say, make the hilarious circumstances it led to, because I would probably fall over if Alexander Isak switches me and runs at me. Not that I'm a footballer, a Premier League footballer, but yeah, unbelievable. We're going to leave it there for part two of the show, and we'll talk even more about these lads who've been so good in this win after these short adverts. We have to talk about Elliot Anderson in this game, this performance. You know, Si, since he came back into the team after this really unfortunate and lengthy injury, he's been sensational. What did he make of his contribution yesterday, pal?
Huge, huge. We've just spoken about how the midfield weren't as crucial to this game, but in many ways there's a reason for that. And I think it's been our Achilles heel for so many weeks, the midfield, about how kind of slow we build up, especially in a game like this where we're going to have less possession and let them have the ball and then kind of use the ball more productively when we get it. For weeks and weeks, and for large parts of the season when we didn't have much to choose from, you had Longstaff. I'll even include Joe Linton in this. We're all pleased he's got a new contract, but he was also guilty at times of moving the ball very slowly and kind of killing any chance of a counter-attack. Whereas right now, the personnel available, and Anderson's a huge part of this, we can play that counter-attacking football. Counter-attacking football relies on two things. It relies on having pacey centre-forwards who are good enough to control the ball that's kind of gone long and get it under and cause problems to defenders. Gordon and Isak are obviously miles away from other options in that sense. And then you need midfielders who can find them with those passes and who can move the ball quickly and who are positive and confident enough to get their head up and go forward instead of thinking, right, I'm just going to go back to my full-back, I'm going to go back to my centre-half. So Anderson, Bruno as well, obviously, for, you know, he picks out some outrageous passes again in this game, but Anderson drives the team forward. He picks up the ball in midfield. Bruno looks up to Anderson and he thinks, yeah, I'm going to give you the ball even if you've got a man on you. Whereas I think sometimes he'll look up at Longstaff and go, no, I'm going to turn around and go somewhere else. He might look up at Byrne and go, yep, no, I'm going to have to go the other way. If he trusts Elliot Anderson to give him the ball, whether there's a man near him or not, and Anderson trusts himself not to take the easy option, go back, he'll turn around. You'll see Gordon's made the run, or you'll see Barnes is overlapping on the side and get that ball forward. He always goes forward. He always looks to try and beat a man. It's just a totally different thing to watch from what we've seen for so long. And I know the team was lacking in confidence, and there's lots of reasons why we were in the slump we were, but what a breath of fresh air he is. And he kind of just encaptures the turnaround of this team, the kind of energy and the confidence is back. And it just looks like a breath of fresh air in this team, doesn't he?
I think to come back from an injury like that and have that confidence and it not be built up over quite a significant number of games is just a really remarkable thing. To take a shot, to move the ball up the pitch, he just looked so assured yesterday. He looked like, we've talked about how well drilled they were, how disciplined yesterday's game plan was, and that's part of it. But you have to really believe in yourself. And he's a young lad. I think he's only like, and we like to make sure we know everybody's ages because Lewis Miley's young. Elliot Anderson, I think he's only about 21. This injury that he's had could really have dented his confidence, but he's come back. He's bigger. He's physically bigger than he was before. He started that sort of journey before he got injured, and he's physically a presence on the pitch. And he just really believes in what he's doing. And it's, I don't know, I find that kind of astonishing coming back into the side that has had a confidence dip over the last sort of few months. It was a real pleasure to watch.
Got a low centre of balance, hasn't he? I like that. And he's got a good pair of shoulders on him, so he's not going to get knocked off the off the ball.
It's crucial, I think, the physicality. How his midfield normally relies on a big lad in there to go and take the ball off players. And when it's not there, when Lewis Miley was in the team and he did great, and particularly just before his injury, he was getting better all the time. But he's 17 years old, no other Premier League midfielder was going to think, I need to be careful of this lad coming from behind us and taking the ball off me and embarrassing me. It just wasn't going to happen. And I thought Sean Longstaff yesterday had his best game in ages. He looked more comfortable. He looked more certain of his role. Didn't do much on the ball, but that's okay. That's not his role. I think Elliot Anderson, being the enforcer in midfield, allows Longstaff to just be all legs and support his teammates. And one of the most remarkable things about Anderson, and I'll include us in this podcast, but we don't get paid compared to the big media outlets covering the game, is that when Newcastle had all these fixtures and people were listing the players out, Anderson was just never mentioned. It was like he wasn't a loss, he wasn't a miss, and that probably, you know, he'd have noticed that. Charlotte and I were in a lift with him, and he was just like, when he was injured, weren't we? And he was just like, oh, Ali Anderson.
Yeah.
Looks fine, but didn't play again for months.
Yeah. you seem fine. Get on the pitch.
Get on the pitch. But it was just like, oh, yeah, he's missing. No one was thinking, oh, I can't wait for Anderson to be back. Mm. So he surprised us all. He might have even surprised Eddie Howe. I don't know. But Howe's always talked him up, I think, even last season when he chose not to send him out on loan. I think Howe wanted him to develop him. And one of the things that impressed me most about him yesterday was, first of all, he's able to read the game. So he's able to make interceptions and blocks and tackles before the danger happens. That's something that you probably, I don't know if you could learn it, but to be 21 years old and not have played a lot of top-level football and be able to do that is pretty special. The other thing is that him and Harvey Barnes are a real danger pair together. Now, we'll want to see Harvey Barnes play with Joe Linton to see how that goes as well, but the fact that whenever Barnes gets the ball, Anderson's on his bike. He knows what he's got to do. He knows he's got to get outside, but he wants the ball off him. He's not just making the run to be a decoy so Barnes can cut inside and hit it on his right, which is what Barnes want to do. He's gutted any time he doesn't get the ball. If Elliot Anderson's in the box, he doesn't get the ball. Doesn't matter what happens after that, he's absolutely devastated not to get it. And that's a real kind of confidence. That's a real, I know I'm good enough. Give me the ball and something will happen. When you're 21 years old and you're playing in the same team as Isak and Gordon and Grimaric and others, pretty special to me.
He's got his goal's coming, isn't it? I thought he was unlucky yesterday.
Very close.
The keeper made a good save at the Gallagher end, didn't he? I thought, oh, that could have just squirted in. I think he's challenged. If the keeper had been on message, I think what he needs now in his game after a really good performance yesterday is consistency. So he needs to be really the same standard against Palace away, which will be a tough game because I think going there is always tough. Yeah. And then Sheffield United, everyone expects us to roll Sheffield United over, but football isn't as simple as that. Mm-hmm. So these next two games in particular, however, Elliot, we're all on your side. We need you to reach those standards. He was exceptional yesterday. He just needs to maintain it, doesn't he? That's his thing. In terms of not being noticed and mentioned when he was out, it's weird, isn't it? Because I remember back to the events that True Faith did in the summer, and all the media lads were on stage at the stand. They all referenced him, didn't they? They all referenced Elliot Anderson, this being his breakout season, and unfortunately that hasn't happened because he's been injured for so much of it. But this is his opportunity in these six games to kind of make up for lost ground and, you know, persuade the club that he's, you know, going to be in and around the first team next season.
I'm less convinced than you that his goal's coming. He absolutely desperately needs it, but he just feels like one of those players, he's just never going to get it. There's loads of times, like you say, Alex, where he looks so frustrated because he is the pass. He's found himself in a few yards of space at the edge of the box. And it's almost like they forget he's there or that they're surprised he's there because he just... I don't mind the fact that Isak and Gordon and Barnes are all very selfish. They want goals and they're looking to get towards goal and they're looking to get a shot off. That's great because we're often so wasteful in the box, but sometimes he's just there and he is the pass and I feel like until he gets that goal, we're going to just like, it's a bit like the Almiron situation when he first arrived, waiting and waiting for that goal. Because I think once he gets it, that's the monkey off his back. And it's like, yeah, okay, I'm here. I'm a Premier League footballer. Yeah. I've got a goal to my name. Because I totally agree with everything you've said. He really looks the big deal. And he'd had an unreal preseason, and that's why everyone was talking him up. And it's that big injury was knocked him into fear. Most young players, you have a 6-month injury, don't then make it. You know, it can be the end of them. They end up going down the divisions and just kind of going into kind of the ether of average footballers. He's still got the chance here. He's got the rest of the season to make a name for himself. And I'm less confident I'm getting the goal as much as he desperately needs it. It just feels like he's one of those players. He's getting very unlucky. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he will get...
Listeners, that's a tip to get Anderson on first goal at Palace, isn't it?
We'll talk about Isak and Gordon. We haven't got loads of time left and we really do have to talk about them. You know, remarkable statistics between them. Gordon now double figures in the Premier League for goals. The fact that Isak now is up there chasing the golden boot this season, I think has 17 in the Premier League. Just incredible statistics from them both. Isak will never score a hat-trick for Newcastle. He's the king of the breaks.
Not allowed.
Yeah, not allowed. I'm surprised Howe didn't take him off yesterday. they win the game for Newcastle. The rest of the performance is great, defensive is great, but in terms of winning the game, putting the ball in the back of the net, which is what ultimately it's all about, there isn't a better kind of partnership. And there were more of a partnership yesterday at times. They were both playing up front. And nothing screams to me more about their quality than Newcastle's first goal, because it's a long ball played over the top by Bruno. It's a decent ball. There's three Spurs players back and there's two of them. And it just felt like the moment you knew Gordon was in contention to get that ball, you knew he was going to get it, you knew the pass was going to be right, and you knew the finish was going to be there. And Newcastle, I mean, these lads cost 100 million quid between them, so it's not like it should surprise us, their quality, because they cost so much money and Howe was so sold on both of them. But like Mick said earlier, that's where the game was won. What we had up top compared to what they had up top, there's no contest. And the pass, I think, from Gordon to Isak is underrated. It's perfect. It's the weight is right, the pace is right, and the Spurs lad ends up on his arse because of it ultimately.
What really struck me yesterday about Gordon's game in particular was how like Isak he started to play, like how he uses his physicality. He is like Isak physically. He's not as tall, but he's skinny. He's got like noodly legs and arms, much like him. And how he kind of, I don't know if it's from training with Isak and working with him very closely, because they're clearly very in tune with each other, but how he started to be able to kind of dance around several players in the way that Isak does. I know he could do that before, but there's just a finesse to his game I'm starting to see that reminds me of Isak's game, and watching them play together it's just great. It's just great.
It's because they're so well balanced. They're so strong. So I watch Gordon and I think he's like, I mean, it's not a picking on him, is it? I mean, he looks like he could do with a good dinner.
Yeah, he's very skinny.
I look at him, but he never gets bumped off the ball. Or if he does, it's a foul. Mm-hmm. So, and that's because of his balance and how he can position himself, and defenders are like, oh no, if I touch him, he's going to go over. He's just, and Isak's a bit like that as well, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly like that. It was just nice.
Yeah, they're so in tune with each other. I think this is what we're seeing. We've not had a huge stretch of games where they've both been in the team consistently. There's always been injuries or reasons to mainly Isak to come out of the team, and kind of the once you see they just know where they're running, they know where they're going to find each other. I suppose just back to Anderson quickly, that wasn't the case for him, was it? There was lots of times where he's kind of making the overlap and run, and then Barnes pops it up to him when he's not expecting it, and it's kind of like they need to play a few more games together and they're going to understand each other a bit better. But Gordon and Isak are already there, as is Bruno, because he knows exactly where to hit the ball every time, and he pings it in the perfect space for them. And I think that's what we're getting now from this kind of momentous. Yeah, we'll call it momentous. It's going to be a momentous run with momentum. Is that the players just know how they're playing together and there's that cohesion again, whereas it just felt so scattered and so listless for periods over the winter that it's just so nice to see. And those two up front have encapsulated every part of that.
Some of the football's so simple as well, isn't it? Mm. You know, so, you know, the Isak third goal is an old-style larrabit up the pitch for the centre-forward. It was like something that Tommy Cassidy could have been doing to Supermac 50 years ago, you know. So he just ran onto it, finished, is superb. And but Barnes is like that as well. He's a bit old-fashioned in terms of how he just hairs down after the ball. He's got a lot more than an old-fashioned player, don't get me wrong. But there's a kind of a simplicity to how Newcastle attack. Just at pace, really fast.
Yeah.
Come on to us. We're going to hit you quick on the break and we're going to put the ball, as Alex says, in the grass behind your last man.
That third goal, though, like Isak starts that run before Bruno's even dispossessed the Spurs player. It's that intuition and it's that reading of the game that's just incredible. I didn't notice it as it was happening. You just think, oh, he's seen Bruno get the ball and he's running up the pitch. And then you watch it back and he's already running. He's already making sure that he's onside and everything's... And then he just has this confidence in Bruno. Bruno's going to get the ball. He's going to see that I'm running. He's going to get the ball to me and I'm going to score the goal. It's just amazing. I haven't seen a player with that kind of... a centre-forward with that kind of intuition and ability... Maybe I've never seen that live from Newcastle.
Yeah, probably not. You know, yeah. It's been pretty bad for quite a long time. funnily enough, who I'll ask you all a question: whose record has Isak broken in terms of scoring the most goals in a row in games at St James's Park? And not in terms of overall, because Alan Shearer scored 15, which seems incredibly high in the 96-97 season, goals to score in a row at St James's Park. But who was the last player to score so many goals consecutively at St James's Park in games? Anyone know?
Andy Cole.
No, he did do it. He had eight, I think, in 93-94. But
in any league?
No, Newcastle.
No,
any league, yeah. Anyone? It was Johan Gufran.
Oh,
wow.
Five in a row.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, I never have said that.
Yeah, Alexander Isak's better than him. comfortably sure. So
you got a song yesterday, Gufran.
Yeah.
Singing in the corner.
We will leave it there. There's loads more to talk about in this game, but we've run out of time. We have the review show later on today on our Patreon platform, so get involved in that and for loads more reaction to this unbelievable game. It's been a pleasure to speak to you all. Just a reminder for me, tickets available now to our live show on Friday the 26th of April, the night before Sheffield United home at Aspers Casino, Newcastle. We would love to see you there. Click the link in the description to this. Speak to you all after Palace. Bye. This podcast is brought to you by Aspers Casino, Newcastle, home of the £4 pint on match day. That's all Newcastle home games and any televised Newcastle fixture. The offer applies from midday until midnight on all draft beers. Be gamble aware, over 18s only. Visit begambleaware.org. Be drink aware, and for details and T's and C's, visit aspersnewcastle.co.uk.